I was meeting with this Jewish woman, and we were talking about differences in faith. Her and I were having this great conversation about Sabbath, and she considers herself a secular Jew, and she was talking about the ways in which she still observes Sabbath, and then that comes from Torah, and I'm like, yeah, I still have some Sabbath practices, and she's like, why would you do anything with Sabbath? You're a Christian. And we were talking about like how the Hebrew scriptures inform my life and how they inform her life, and these stories of Abram and his call from Ur and all that, these are the stories that we share with our Jewish and our Muslim friends all together. We all share those stories. And so these are huge, big stories. And in the middle of this really big story, the hero of the first 15 chapters of Genesis is really just God. And then Abram comes on the scene, and Abram becomes a person in this story. Noah had been in there very briefly. And then we get to chapter 16 of Genesis, and it says this. I'm going to read the whole chapter and then we'll respond to it. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave. Perhaps I can build a family through her." Great ideas in history. Go sleep with my slave. I will have a family through her. Surely nothing will come of this. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian slave Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, "You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me." AKA Abraham. It's your fault. "Your slave is in your hands," he says, Abram said. "Do with her whatever you think best." Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going?" "I am running from my mistress Sarai," she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man." I don't know. Maybe that's a compliment. Dave Lynn, you're a real wild donkey of a man. I'm going to revive that. Hashtag wild donkey. All right. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. "You are the God who sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." The Hebrew translation there, "I have now seen," is actually made, the Hebrew word is actually better. "I have seen." Remember the idea in Exodus when Moses sees the backside of God's glory is how some translations do it? And the actual, like, some people have explained it like, "I have seen where God just was," kind of that thing. Like, he was just here and I saw the remnants of it. It's that same idea. I have seen either the backside of God, or I've seen where God just was. "That is why the well was called Be'er Lahai Roy. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered." So Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael. Thoughts, comments, impressions, ideas, head scratchers? Yeah, so some people, this passage is really, I mean, we could go way off. I think Jeff Agin has taught this passage here in our church, talking about Christians and Jews and Muslims and Ishmael is the father of Arab nations and all that stuff. Yeah, huge, huge implications for that. And when you start getting an interfaith dialogue, we come back to this story. Like, this story becomes a big conversation in interfaith dialogue. I believe, did Jeff talk about this passage in his book? He may have talked about this passage for a bit in his book. Yeah. Yeah, so what Peggy's saying, if you can't hear, is that this idea of what the angel says to her doesn't exactly sound like, it's going to be awesome for your kid, right? This isn't like your kid is going to be at war his whole life. It's going to be hard. He's going to, apparently, wild donkey of a man isn't necessarily a compliment, although we figure out. Like, from the context, wild donkey of a man seems to be, you know, all the rest of it. he will be against everyone. Everybody will be against him, and he will live in hostility, not with one or two people, but everyone he comes in contact with. That'll be his life. And she responds to this with, oh, but I'm seen by God. Yeah, good. I'm going to come back to that idea in a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Play with that idea, Joe, for a minute. Like, so, or maybe somebody else wants to jump in. So if we were going to read this passage, and I was going to ask you, which I will tomorrow, and I'll explain that in a minute, to put yourself in Hagar's shoes. What do you feel if you're Hagar? Where is she in this story? What's happened when she encounters the angel of the Lord? What has she just done? She's a slave who's done what? Run away. She's run away. So who does she have with her? Herself. That's nobody. She has her and this baby that she's going to have. That's it. She's all alone. And I'm sure she has a lot of fears, right? Many of the fears being maybe this, like, we're going to be on our own. We're going to have to fight. We're going to have to scrap. We're going to have to like, how are we even going to survive? Like, all of that's a big deal. Maybe what the angel is promising is it won't end with you. It's going to be bigger than that. So like, whatever you fear, yeah, but more. More of that. Yeah. So it plays right into her narrative. It's just what pays. It's not encouraging news. It's not like, hey, whatever you're afraid of, don't worry. It's all going to work itself out. God is in control, right? It's not that. Yeah. Yeah. So even on top of that, the kid that you have is going to be a wild donkey of a man. And you're going to go back and you're going to be abused some more too. Good luck with that. And yet, what is her, if you're Hagar, from what we read in the text, how does she come away from this encounter with God or from the angel? She feels seen by God. Here's why I want to read this story. Yeah, there's lots of big stuff about Islam and Christianity and all those things in this passage. But to me, the tender moment of this passage, this idea of Christ with us, is that sentence right there, that you are the one who sees me. It's easy, I think, to think of God in the big narrative, right? It's easier for us to think of the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the God who called Abraham, the God who created in Genesis 1, the God who destroyed the world in a flood, and the God who separated everybody in Babel. These are the stories that we're getting in Genesis. Big, epic stories, God above us. And we sing to that God. We sing songs in our services all the time about the transcendency and the majesty of God. And God is how great thou art, right? And you have to say thou in that context, because it just feels bigger there, right? Kind of. Can I tell you a funny little story? Jennifer just finished a book, and I'm reading it, about this guy who went to Brown University. This is such a good book, by the way. Susan put us onto it. And he's a student at Brown University, and when he's a sophomore, he decides to go spend a semester at Liberty University just to see. He knows no evangelical Christians in his life. He's like, I'm just going to go figure it out, so I'm going to go to the mothership for a semester. So he goes to it. So he lives at Liberty University. And so there's this great line. I just lost it. And Jennifer had read it to me before, and I laughed. And then I got to it yesterday, I think, and read again and laughed again. And he says, I went to the chapel service, and they were singing a song called How Great Is Our God. And he's like, I don't actually know that was the name of the song, but here are the lyrics. How great is our God? How great is our God? How great, how great, how great is our God? I just love that. Like, but that's what we sing. The big, how great is our God? Our God is an awesome God. Like, that was from my era, like, back then. Like, we sing these big, above me kind of songs. That's not the hard part of this Christ with us that's hard for me to get. The harder part for me to get is he is the one who sees me. Then in the midst of this big epic story of all these things God is doing, he sees this lonely slave woman named Hagar, who's run away from her mistress and is out in the desert by herself under a tree. And he even doesn't even give her any encouragement or take away any of her fears. But in the midst of all of that, she feels seen by God, and being seen by God is somehow enough for her. And she names the place, that phrase there, where am I at? Be'er Lahai Roy is like the one who sees me spring, which isn't super marketable. It doesn't really go on a soap bar real well, but it she names that place. And by the way, that place comes up again in other places in Scripture. Like, it becomes the name for that place, is the God who sees me spring. That she walks away from that, and her life is chaotic after this still. But in that moment, she knows that she was seen by God. So here's the temptation for all of us, right? So we all have our problems, right? We have our anxieties or fears. I want you to just for a second, let's do this. Grab onto something in your life that you're fearful about, or you have anxiety about, or turmoil about, or something that you're just, it's taking up brain space in your head. It's a relationship, it's a work thing, it's a family thing. Maybe after coming off Thanksgiving, you've got family things like in your head that aren't usually there, you can ignore for most of the year, but it's that season to family. And so whatever it is, take one of those things, right? Right now. I think the temptation for me most of the time is as soon as I start to like feel that thing, whatever that thing is, however that thing feels inside of me, no matter what it's doing in me, my temptation is to do something like this. But there's starving kids in Ethiopia. But there's wars everywhere. But there's girls in Southeast Asia. But there's people being hosed down in South Dakota. But there's homeless people. But there's... And I start doing this, but there's all these big problems in the world. What does God care about me? And what Hagar experiences of God in this story is that in the midst of all that, he's the one who sees me. What I wanted to say, and I don't even know how to say it super eloquently this morning, I wrestled over how to say this really well, is like part of it is a deficient theology. We believe somehow that God only has a limited number of resources to care about things in the world, and that if he's going to care about me, somehow he's going to take his attention off starving children in Africa, right? But wait, if I tell God what I'm feeling, if I talk about my experience to God, if I lay that out before God, somehow some child is going to go hungry. And it's a ridiculous notion, right? We believe that the love of God and the attention of God is infinitely deep. It's like that thing, for those of you that have kids, like when we first had Caleb, we thought, oh, we couldn't love a child anymore. Nobody has loved a child in the history of the planet the way we love this child. Anybody else experience that about Caleb? Thank you. And like we just thought, like there's no more love. We have no more love inside of us than the love we have for that kid. And so we're like, well, I don't know about a second one. And then Gavin was born, and like, oh my gosh. There's so much more love in the tank than I thought there was, right? And so like, it wasn't that we had to shift some of our love from Caleb, like, oh, we love, oh, Caleb's getting 100%, now he's got to have, like, we got to shift some off to Gavin. It's not like that at all. We love Gavin every bit as much as we love Caleb. And I hope you all love Gavin like that too, like you love Caleb, like that'd be amazing. And then we had another one, and then we had Maddox. But the other, teasing. He's the fun one to tease. Right? That's the way it works, is even at a human level, our love can keep expanding and growing. And yet somehow in my daily life and in my daily conversation with God and my daily understanding of what it means that God is with us, I think somehow if God pays attention to me, he can't also pay attention to big things. And somehow in this story of Hagar, what's beautiful to me is in the middle of the big story, this woman who's a slave woman on the run from her mistress, who gets really bad news from God, walks away from the experience saying, but I was seen. God saw me. I don't know if you've ever been in a really dark space in your life, where you feel like you're really, really alone. You feel like nobody sees you. And then like somebody cuts through all the darkness and says, nope, I'm here, talk to me. Tell me what it is you feel. Tell me what it is you experience. I wanna know all of it. And somebody that has that ability to be expansive and not get caught up in their own dramas, but can just enter into it and say, I'm open, I see you. I'll take whatever it is that you have. Say it all to me. Empty the tanks. Let me know. I'll tell you. And I know I've said this before, and I think I can speak for Dustin on this. That's probably one of our greatest joys as a pastor, is to have that space to be able to say to people, in the midst of your darkness, just let it all fly. There's nothing you can say that'll throw me off. It's fine. Just say it all. That is a gift, to be seen by someone else. And it's a bigger gift to be seen by God. That's the story of Hagar. And so I want to invite you to two things. The first one is I want to invite you to allow yourself to be seen. I love the words, and I got this from Ruth Haley Barton several years ago, to name the truest thing I can about myself to God. I think that's a really helpful way for me to think sometimes. I feel like life is a journey of always going to new depths of understanding ourselves. That's one of the reasons I love Enneagram so much, is I feel like there's just this ongoing journey of peeling back the onion, right? Just deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. But I like the idea of that where I'm at right now, what the best things I understand about who I am in the world that I inhabit, I'm just going to name those things about, what does she say? When he asked the question, I love this. He asked the questions, what are you doing? And she just says the truest thing she knows to say, I'm running away. I'm just running away from it all. And so I think maybe the gift in this, the part for us in this Advent season as we start into it, is if God is with us, what's the truest thing you can say to God, knowing that God sees me? The deepest, darkest, this is what I have. I think that to me, sometimes that's good. Like I feel like there's times where that's just nothing but sheer wonder. I went running last night at dusk, which is my favorite time to run. Like when the sun has gone down and the sky is still lit up, you know, like, and it's this time of year, it's just all orange and blue and it's gorgeous. And I just feel full of wonder. And the truest thing I can say to God in that moment is nothing but like, oh, it's just wonder. It's just, oh. And then other moments where to even say what's truest about me, I can't even put the words out because it's just tears. And so part of what Christ with us, I think, means in a very tangible way is that when I say my true is true, God sees me. And it doesn't mean that all that goes away or that it's all fixed, but that I'm seen. I'm seen and I'm known by God. The second part of that for us this morning is to tie back to last week, is I think that part of what it means to be Christian, part of what it means to be a follower of Jesus, is that we are Jesus' hands, we are Jesus' feet, and we get to be that for each other. We get to be the ones who see each other. We get to be that space for each other where we say, in the middle of your pain, in the middle of your hurt, in the middle of your crazy, in the middle of your anxiety, in the middle of your fears, you're seen by God. I see you, and I'll remind you that God sees you. And so maybe this morning, as we wrap up, and we're going to say this prayer together in just a minute, maybe that's the exercise. Is maybe during communion, there's something you need to say to God. Maybe as you're standing in line, coming forward to take the bread, like you just need to say something very true of yourself to God. This God is my experience right now. I'm running away, I'm angry, I'm hurt, whatever it is, just to say it to God and allow yourself to believe the ridiculousness of this idea that God is so big that he can care about everything else in the world and also care about me. In the same way that as a parent, I can care for all my kids and all of you all, and I can still care for the one at the same time. And it doesn't require me to shift love or to balance out how much love I have or attention. Attention is a problem as a human, but love I don't have to shift out. And then maybe the second thing then, the second invitation is maybe in this week or today, there's somebody you know that you need to sit with and just say, I see you. So talk. I see what you're in right now, and I'll be the space that can open up and just say, whatever you need to say, there it is, go. During this Advent season, we want to try to help you. Like we say in the church that our goal during the holy seasons, Advent and Lent, is to help you try a little harder, but that's not exactly what I'm after. But there are times and seasons where I'm a little bit more intentional than other times and seasons, right? There's times and seasons, like if you know you're going on a vacation to a beach, it's a season to like work out a little bit extra, right? Like we think that way. There's a season where like I'm gonna push a little bit more, or whatever. And so what we try to do as a church, if you're new to us, is that during Advent and during Lent, we try to give you more invitations, more opportunities to push a little bit more and to say, you know what? I don't know how to have a morning time of like a quiet time or a morning space of silence and solitude. Thinking about doing that for all the time is overwhelming. But I can do it for 4 weeks. I can try something for 4 weeks, or I can try something once a week for the next 4 weeks. And so we try to create opportunities where you can go a little deeper during these seasons. So we're going to give you some more of those. After communion, we have some announcements for things that are happening during Advent here. But one of the things that's going to happen each week is Brian and I have been co-conspirating, not sure that's a word, on a handout that we'll give to you each week. So on the handout, when you get it, is going to have an exercise each day of the week, something you can do. Now, this is not legalism. You don't have to do any of them. You can do all five. You can pick one. Like whatever, this is here to serve you. If you want to say like, I'm going to try that. During this Advent season, I'm going to try to get up a couple minutes early in the morning before the kids so I can have some space. And so this week, the particular exercises are all revolving around scripture. And so there's five different passages to read slowly, and I provided you some questions. Now, if you hate that I printed 100 of these today, like I do, on the back side of this paper is a directions to go to Remind. Now, if you have school-age children, you may know this app. Remind app is how our teachers all communicate with us in all these ways. And we found out that we could create our own class as a church. So if you would rather not get the piece of paper and you would rather get this every morning at 6 a.m. as a text message, like right now, you can text ID, like Imago Dei, Advent 16 to 81010. And when you do that, you'll get signed up to be in our text group. And I can tell you right now, you will get 3 texts tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. And I've already scheduled the rest of the week. You'll get a text at 6 a.m. every day the rest of the week. And it's the same thing that's on this paper. It's abbreviated because I figured out when I went to the Remind app that they had to be 140 characters. So it's a little abbreviated from what it is on here. But it's there. The scripture's there. A question or two is there to help you. So, I mean, it's not rude to pull out your phones right now. Totally go if you want to sign up. And like I said, you'll get one tonight, I think, welcoming you to the group, and then you'll get them tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., and they'll come every day at 6 a.m. And so each week for the Advent season, we'll do that. And then just so you know, I will destroy the class when we're done, so we're not keeping your text stuff. We're just going to randomly text you things because I decide that the text group becomes my new Facebook. We won't do that with your information. So, and then at the bottom of the sheet, just so you know, the other piece of this is at the very bottom of the sheet in this box down here, and this won't come through text, but at the bottom of the sheet is a small group guide that if you want to take something from this page or this teaching and move it into your small group context, you can take what's here at the bottom. Like this week, it just says take one of the passages and work through it together if you want. Okay? Does that make sense? Easy peasy? So you can do that there. If you don't do that, the back of this is directions for how to get signed up on Remind. Yes, sir. You are a parent. Thank you. Did it ask you that? Okay, you're a parent. Put yourself in as a parent. I guess I didn't have to because I'm already in. Like, I already have, like, so many. That's the app that I get blown up all the time because one of our kids' teachers loves it. Well-informed parent, I guess, so. For the rest of you, anybody that wants these, I will put them outside on the information booth during communion, so you can stop by the information booth and pick them up. And I will subtract from 100 this week and only print the number that I need to print for next week. Is that cool? So let me pray, and then we're going to stand. As soon as I'm done praying, we'll stand together and do the Lorica of St. Patrick, and the communion folks will come down and serve us communion. I think, God, that some of us I think some days in my marriage, I think it's too good to be true that I have this woman who's just with me and sees me. And that when I walk in from work, can take just one look and know what my day was like because she sees me so intimately. And to believe, God, that you see us more intimately than that seems audacious. Remind us this week that you are the God who sees us. that even in the midst of big stuff going on in the world and big stuff we care about deeply and big stuff that we hope you're acting in, even in the midst of all that, that you care about me and my problems and the things that stress me out and cause anxiety and cause hurt. You care about those things too. And help us, God, as we feel led by the Spirit to be that for each other, to move into each other's lives with our hands wide open and to say to the people that you're leading us to say it to, like, I see you and I'll listen. Help us to be that for each other. In your name I pray. Amen.